ice that held a belly full of fire.
Are you familiar with it?
I leave this stripped memory where it belongs, within. I have no idea what you're talking about, I snip, whirling around, storming toward the exit. Con banks, cutting me off, his leather tunic dusted in a fine layer of frost. My gaze snaps up to meet his fiery glare that's so at odds with the icy fractals dusting his hair and beard, making it glimmer in the luminous light. Move!
See, I think you're lying.
He pushes forward a step, emitting the immense energy of a mountain-sized beast in his prime, an energy impossible to ignore.
I think you know this moon better than anyone else.
There's a rumbling within me, from somewhere deep beneath my lake, a hum of acknowledgement I neglect, focusing instead on the anger swelling within my chest like a ball of dragon flame. My foot slides back, upper lip lifting from my canines.
I think this beast cradled you for 100 phases, breathing life back into your broken body until you both fell from the sky. I think you broke from Slatra's tombstone like a hatching dragon.
You're fucking mad, I hiss as my back collides with the moon.
Am I?
He arches over me like a rocky overhang, leveling me with a look that sucks all the oxygen from my lungs.
Because I knew a female who died, tragically, whose lifeless body was sailed into the sky by the adoring beast at your back with my torn-out heart in her fucking fist.
He rasps, lifting his hand into a claw that he shakes in my face.
Her name was Elowen, and she laughed with the wind, cried with the rain. She angered with fire and bellowed with the ground. Her heart thumped in synchrony with
enough. He growls, and there's a clicking sound. He says a word I don't hear over my roaring pulse as a flame dances to life in his hand. My body stills, paralyzed by this sizzling sight. A deeper, almost sentient silence hollows the cavern surrounding us. A silence that seems to spawn from within me. Like I'm sponging the sound, absorbing it. Con brings that flame so close to my face, I'm certain he's about to smear it across my skin, and I become innately conscious of the fact that something inside me is watching, listening.
You look me in the eye, Moonbeam, right in the soul, and tell me you don't hear this fire's hissing shrieks. Look me in the eye, sharpen those words, and don't fucking blink as you plunge them through my heart.
I struggle to gather the breath to tell him exactly that, that his flame does not shriek or hiss or spit. It is but a flame, and it does one thing. It burns. Crush your flame, sire, or I'll crush you. I seethe with cutthroat certainty, violently aware that my other is on the brink of bursting free. I may be utterly against hurting this male, but I cannot speak for it. That's a promise. A line forms between his frosty brows. He whips his hand away, crushing it into a fist of smoke, flooding my system with a cold deluge of relief.
Who hurt you?
I do not hurt, King Burn. I harden. And no, your pet flame did not sing to me, not even a little bit. Otherwise, I would have sung it up the hall and ordered it to suicide itself in a puddle. His frown deepens, his hand coming up as if to cut my cheek, like he wants to touch me but is worried I might slice it off.
Don't lie to me, Moonbeam. Lie to the world, but please don't lie to me.
Stop talking to me like you know me. You don't. Even if I did fall with your precious moon, I owe you nothing. Elowen is dead.
Stop.
His word commands. His eyes plead. Both ricochet off my armor like arrows I snatch, lodging them between his ribs. Saving my life, dragging me away to your big, bright kingdom where everybody fucking loves you is not going to reincarnate her. I'm not yours, and I never will be. He steps back, leaving me arched over Slatra's solidified wing, allowing me space to draw my first full breath since our atmospheres clashed. I ignore the unveiled pain in his eyes as I charge toward the stairs without a single glance over my shoulder, every step skyward pulling me farther from the comfortable nest of chill. I ignore the tugging sensation that tries to lure me to turn around, to climb over that folded wing, tuck within the hollow, and fall asleep in Slatra's stony embrace. Most of all, I ignore the sense that every step skyward is another step further from my truth. Instead, I strip the moment of all the soft wisps of attachment and curiosity, bind them into a parcel, then tie them to a stone, finding my internal lake already crushed near the shore, a convenient hole cracked through the ice, making it easy for me to discard the package. I don't believe in much, but I do believe that the unknown needs to be handled with caution, much like a dragon. Leave them alone, and they rarely decide to attack. You can exist in harmony for eternity, so long as nobody makes any sudden movements. Try to climb on their backs or steal their eggs? Well, chances are you're dead. I happen to like living in my blank oblivion. It's lonely, but lonely folk have nothing to lose. That suits me perfectly. Rave. Chapter 56. I explode free of the stairwell and burst into the ruffling breeze. Shoving past a low canopy of big round leaves, I storm for the door to Khan's suite. I knew I shouldn't have followed him down there, I mutter to my stupid self. When has following somebody into a dark tunnel to the words of, "It's just down here," ever been a good idea? Idiot, I bite out, hammering the word into my brain like a nail that obviously wedged loose, landing me in a cavern with a deceased moon plume he thinks was mine. The same moon plume he has drawn on his back. A realization that threatens to cleft me straight through the heart, leaving me with another package to discard in my icy nether. Snarling, I slap myself. Hard. Idiot, idiot, idiot. I charge through the sitting room and snatch my knapsack, flipping the flap as I move toward a bookshelf, pilfering a few dragon scale blades and a number of iron ones because, despite my lapse in brain function, I'm incredibly resourceful. I'm almost at the door when Khan shoves before me, cutting me off. Like Rygun himself just pushed before the exit with a belly full of flames and fire in his eyes. Stand aside, I growl, scouring his savagely beautiful features cast in a stony frown. He grabs my hand, pressing a small leather satchel into my palm, heavy with the promise of what I suspect is a significant amount of gold.
Bloodstone, he says. You'll need it once you cross the border.
Oh. Thoughtful. He takes my face in both hands, snatching my breath, pulling me so close our noses press together, his shuddered exhale a too welcomed fever upon my flesh.
Chase death, Elowyn Rave.
A gasp cuts down my throat like a blade, wetted edges goring deep. Elowyn Rave?
Spend your life alone, forever wondering why you scream in your sleep. Calling for that very moon plume I've spent the past 23 phases piecing back together, hoping it would bring your spirit peace. All because you loved that beast so fucking much,
he utters, shaking my head.
I knew it would break you to know she was scattered all over the world after scavengers raided her impact zone.
I... My words catch on the tip of my tongue as he takes my hand and brings it close to his heart, the pad of his thumb running back and forth across the torn skin down the side of my nail. His gaze implores, voice plagued with a sadness too heavy to bear, as he says,
"Chase death, Moonbeam, and I pray your bloodlust brings you the same sense of peace I feel, just knowing you exist."
He plants a kiss on my temple, so swift and light I barely register it until he's gone, until he's storming into the adjacent room where he disappears into the shadows, the ghost of his kiss still a brand upon my pebbling skin. For a moment, I consider chasing him, asking if Rave was Elowin's last name, on the off chance I ever want to unveil a past that'll undoubtedly burn just like the rest of it. I reach up, touch my temple, whip my hand away. No. Snarling, I tighten my fingers around the sack of bloodstone and storm through the open door, hoping the hutch doesn't shut for the slumber, that there's a molten maw already saddled, ready for a swift escape from this beautiful, haunting place riddled with too many sinkholes to bear. It's not until I'm tromping across the loft's rocky shore toward the western tip of the cove I've been drawn to since I arrived, the city hutch well and truly at my back, that I realize I have no intention of leaving yet. Another foreign compulsion that'll no doubt bite me in the ass. Diary entry. Elowin Nevon. Age 18 phases. 5,039 phases after stone. It's been a while since my last entry. My attention's been elsewhere, tangled in a web of confusion. That's the only way I can describe this feeling in my chest. After my first fighting lesson with Veya beneath the harsh rays of Dom, which, by the way, is nowhere near as easy as I thought it was going to be, I moved through the halls of the Imperial Stronghold, body aching, smelling like the sun-deterrent poultice she always cakes me in before I step outside. I came to the grated door that leads to Slotra's hutch. Only it was closed. Locked. Sitting beside the door was the male I now know to be Khan Vagor, the eldest son of the king, only recently back from the Boltanic Plains to watch over Dom while his pa helps Tyroth secure his foothold in Arithia. It was the first time I'd seen him since he threw me in the tub, then stormed off to let Veya scrub me down. He was sitting on the ground with a beautiful string instrument resting over his lap, carved from what appeared to be a hunk of ember wood. Such a deep, ruddy tone, like aged blood. He was plucking out a simple tune from the three thick strings, his fingers moving so delicately I felt like they were plucking the chords of my broken heart. He didn't look at me, but the instructions were clear based on the key beside him, based on the massive bowl of red stew and the lump of bread sitting atop a meal tray on the ground across the hall. I leapt for the key, but he snatched my arm, his grip so strong I was immediately aware of how easily he could snap bones. He told me to eat first. 1. Who does that? 2. I'm a mood eater, just like Ma was, and this thing on my head makes me feel nauseous 90% of the time. Doesn't make for much of an appetite. I didn't bother telling Khan Vagor that. He had this look in his eye like it wouldn't have mattered if I did. The rules wouldn't change. And technically, while his pa's gone, I'm living beneath Khan's roof. Khan's rules. Such bullshit. Furious, yet desperate to get back to Slotra, I did as he asked, slurping down the stew so fast I only realized the meal was too rich and spicy when it was far too late, a small sun burning in my gurgling gut. I made it to the privy just in time for my stomach to turn inside out. Or at least that's how it felt. When I came back, the door was unlocked. Khan was gone. The following slumber, he was there again, but this time there was a much smaller serving of a much milder stew that almost reminded me of home, with notes of jumplin bulb and frost fruit. There was also a glass of kolk milk which cleansed my mouth and belly from the mild amount of spice. Every slumber since has been the same strange routine. Me sitting in this vast atmosphere while I fill my belly with meals I can feel flooding me with strength. We don't talk. He simply plays while I eat and earn the key that unlocks Slatra's hutch. Then I leave, his plucked cords chasing me down the tunnel where I huddle within the curve of Slatra's tail, lulled to sleep by the baritone tune. I don't understand what he's doing, why he's doing it. I don't understand why I'm starting to look forward to it.
Vea. Chapter 58. Sunshine punches the side of my face as I climb the jagged stairwell scored into the mountainside, my laden leather satchel banging against my leg every time I take a step. The aurora's yet to rise, the city silent, the air still thick from the downpour. Objectively, I should wait a few cycles before I set out for Arithia in search of Elowen's diary, take time to prepare for the lengthy journey, but I have the patience of a saber-scythe and twice the energy, making for a sleepless slumber fraught with spiky thoughts and feet so itchy I finally gave up and packed a bag. The path cuts left, then flattens into a wide stone shelf dedicated to some of the larger burrows. Like cells of a buzzing beehive, the hutch has been integrated into the mountainside, bearing 227 holes in all different shapes and sizes. Some saber-scythes like to tuck deep within the mountain, others shallow. Some prefer a wide space, others tight and cozy so they can blow the burrow full of flame, then curl up pressed against near molten walls like they're still tucked in an egg. Like Rygun, the adorable monster. I smile at the thought, sweeping my hair back behind my ear. But then a different thought slaps that smile straight off my face. Shit, I mutter. Tick prongs. Did I pack them? I can't remember. Khan may be fine with ripping them off with his bare hands, but that never works for me. The head always dislodges, and then I have to get my fingers in there and fish it out. I lump my pack on the ground and crouch over it, shifting through things I don't remember stuffing in here. No idea why I'd need two forks. My hyperactive, sleep-deprived brain had its reasons, I'm sure. I continue rifling through, trying not to look to my right, to the burrow that's been abandoned since I was 5 phases old. Threading my entire arm into my satchel and feeling around the bottom, my thoughts churn into a black smog as I cast my stare up at the large, thorny moon perched directly above the stronghold, a little lower than many of the other moons in the sky. Jogo, Ma's beloved dragon that she nursed back to health after finding him kicked from a nest as a hatchling. After she passed, I'm told Jogo refused to leave the big round burrow to my right, an abnormality for a saber-scythe, since they like to switch dens more often than a huddle crab switches shells. The very reason we provide so many burrows, an effort to keep our charmed beasts content enough not to mourn their hatching grounds. Jogo's uninterest in emerging was the first sign something was wrong. That he'd fallen into a different form of mourning. The only time I ever saw the light hit his beautiful bronze scales was when I sat on this very plateau waiting for Khan to finish tending a tear in Rygun's wing. Jogo emerged, hobbling, barely able to keep his head off the ground. He'd looked me in the eye, huffed a hot breath upon my face, and I'd never been so scared. Then he made a sharp mewling sound, squinted up at the sky, tilled his droopy wings, and flew. 5 phases old, and I watched him ball up and die in the sky. Something else for Pa to blame on me. Being so young, I actually believed it was my fault, until I grew old enough to understand the beast was mourning Ma. Then, I knew for certain it was. I shoved the prickly thought aside, clearing my throat. Finally, finding the prongs, I shake them victoriously, then tuck them into a pocket that's easy to access, tossing my bag over my shoulder again. I'm just walking past Rygon's burrow, the mouth of it gouged from the way he scraped against it while preparing for his last shed, when I see Khan bent over a saddlebag he's currently repacking. I pause, looking into the burrow's rumbling depths where Rygon is likely sleeping with one eye open, well aware Khan is about to force him from his tight, heated nook. "Where are you going?" I ask, watching Khan tuck one of his packs full of dried flaps of dapa bread. Enough that I realize he has every intention of being away for more than a few slumbers. He cuts a glance at me over his shoulder, brow creased.
"Ticks are out with a vengeance,"
he mutters, reaching into his pocket and pulling out a rumpled parchment lark.
"A charmed beast turned rabid and torched half a village."
Frowning, I set down my pack and advance, taking the lark from his outstretched hand. I smooth it against my thigh, skimming the messy script.
"Blom? Chief Thrawn's beast?"
Khan grunts. "Creators."
"He blazed an entire herd of kolk with no intention of eating. If the beast is left, there are many other villages nearby that he'll decimate before the poison corrodes his heart. I'm getting a head start. Grimm's gathering his gear, then meeting me on the way if he can catch up. The keepers are helping to saddle one of the carters for him now. Lane's beast, I think."
"Nevut?"
"Correct. She's the fastest saber scythe in the hutch that hasn't yet been turned out for the great flirt, and haste is of the essence."
My gaze drifts to the 3 metal spears resting on the ground in a bundled heap, bound with a leather holster that'll attach to Rygon's saddle. I nod, not that he sees it, his attention cast back on his pack, movement stiff and precise as he stuffs it full. Poor Khan. There's nothing worse than hunting a rabid dragon. It's hard to convince yourself that you've put a beast out of its misery when it falls to the ground, rather than soars into the sky, curling up beside its ancestors. For his sake, and for the sake of his massive, tender heart, I hope someone else has grounded the beast before he makes it there. Help folk rebuild their stone homes, and you're a hero. Slaughter a saber scythe, and you're a fucking murderer, no matter how many pats on the back you get. No matter how many folk you save. Clearing my throat, I fold the lark in half and pass it back. "I saw you lead her toward your suite. Please tell me you didn't take her to your shrine." Khan pauses, then continues rearranging his pack as if I didn't speak at all. He pulls the drawstring taut, knuckles blanched with tension as he knots the strips of leather. "Guess that's a yes." I pinch the bridge of my nose, eyes squeezed shut. "You said slowly ease."
"I did."
"This is not that."
"It's not."
I sigh, opening my eyes. "I assume by your general demeanor that she didn't throw herself into your arms before the corpse of her dead dragon and thank you for the missing piece of her mind puzzle?"
"No, Veya. She didn't."
"Shocker," I say on a faux laugh, threading my hands through my hair, contemplating the possibility that his mind's just as lost as the beast he's flying off to slay. "So what, you gave her enough gold to buy her safe passage across the Boltanic Plain so she can chase her welling bloodlust? Where there's a big chance she'll eventually be recognized by either of the twins, both of which have access to a certain tool? perfect leverage to fold her into submission once they blow the lid off that jar. Lovely.
Khan stands, crosses his arms, and frowns down at me, his black and red riding leathers sculpting him into a larger, fiercer, more formidable form of our paw. Something I'm certain he despises every time he looks in the mirror. They get hold of her, we're dead, Khan. How long do you think it'll be before they're swarming our borders, ready to paint this city red and carve into our rich, untapped reserve of bloodstone? We're living on borrowed time, and you fucking know it.
You done?
I plant my hands on my hips, tossing my stare skyward. Why is he calm? The kingdom he's worked so hard to capture, protect, and grow is probably going to be ripped to shreds, all because he dropped the Elowin boulder on Rave before we had a chance to assess the situation from all angles. It's a disaster. Yes, I'm done, I mutter, realizing I need to track back down to the Carter Hutch, tell the Molten Mole riders they need to make themselves scarce, at least until I have a chance to make it to Erythia and back with her diary in hand. Hopefully. There's no way she's getting across the plains on her own. She'd sizzle like Slatra did.
All going to plan. I should be back before the Great Fleur to help raise the platforms.
My gaze snaps to him so fast my head spins. The Miskun predicted that'll be in 30 Aurora cycles.
Correct.
You're leaving for 30 Aurora cycles?
It's a big kingdom, Veya. I can't just fluff around here when there's shit to do. I've been south for a while, and the kingdom doesn't run itself.
Sounds like a convenient excuse to run away. He tips his head to the side, eyes narrowing.
You told me to tread carefully or she'll incinerate herself. This is me treading carefully.
His stare softens a little.
She doesn't want me around. I'm simply abiding.
You tossed her a sack of gold, Khan? She's probably halfway out the door. It's only a matter of time before she's wielded against us.
Dragon Bloodstone.
He corrects, and I groan.
And she's not halfway out the door. She walked straight past the Carter Hutch and headed for the western point.
My heart stops, all the blood rushing from my face. Sharp prickles of emotion pierce the backs of my eyes. She's still in there, I whisper past the swelling pip in my throat. Elowin. Khan nods, just once.
Somewhere.
I swat a tear from my cheek. He looks away, puts his fingers to his lips, and whistles loud. Rykon releases a rumbling exhale that rattles my bones, followed by the scraping, creaking sounds of his immense body nudging free from his tight sleep space. The beast emerges from the darkness in world-trembling increments, cinder eyes glinting in the gloom, plumes of steam billowing from his flared nostrils, the curved tusks protruding from his boxy face a fearsome tribute to his size and age. Khan shoulders his pack and the trio of spears, stalking toward the emerging beast when he stills, looking back at me, then past me to my pack on the ground.
Where are you going, Veya?
Crap. Well, you see, I edge backward, swipe the bag off the ground, and swing it over my shoulder. As I'm sure you recall, she used to write in a diary.
No.
You know I feed off that word, I boast. Besides, I'm not just doing it for you. I need to know things she can't tell me. It's messing with my head now that she's alive again.
Then I'll go.
I snort laugh. While Kadok may be aloof enough to let you roam his kingdom unguarded, Tyroth is not, and he hates you. Fiercely. I can make myself unseen. You can't.
He levels me with a stare to match that of his beast barely protruding from the shadows at his back. A single look that makes me feel more valued than Pa ever did, even though he knows I'm more than capable of taking care of myself. Sometime, I'll thank him for that.
You got rid of that bangle. You told me so.
I lied, I say with stony precision. I didn't lie. It's gone, meaning I have to get it back. Not that I'm going to tell him that. He'll blow a fucking artery if he knows where I tossed it. His eyes narrow. Oh, and I intend to be gone a while. Taste some delicacies on the way, I say, waggling my brows. He immediately breaks my eye contact, shuddering.
I don't want to know about that. Thank you very fucking much.
No, but I need him to shuck this conversation like an itchy cloak. My insinuation that I'm going to prowl for a few good lays is a certain way to repulse him enough he'll...
Fine.
He growls, probably knowing I'd do it without his blessing, but that it'd hurt me more than it'd hurt him. Love him for that. I flash him a smile. Dear brother, are you worried about me?
Since the day Pa shoved you in my arms, squirming, bloody, and screaming.
Since he realized he was all I had. He doesn't need to say it. I can see it in his eyes. Our one good parent died bringing me into this world. Hard for me to mourn someone I never knew, but I hate that I took her from him. That Khan was forced to raise me because Pa didn't care whether I lived or died. The prick. I wish he had another neck to sever.
I wish he had three.
Khan snarls, stalking deeper into the darkness, followed by the grunting sounds of his ascent onto Raigun's saddle. I frown after him, wondering what he means by... Oh. Shit. Khan can't contain a secret for long before it gnaws through his gut. Eventually, he'll have to tell Elowin what Pa somehow accomplished that terrible slumber over an eon ago when her life came crumbling down. When she woke to find her entire family poisoned to death. For someone already misted by the beginnings of bloodlust, that's the sort of news that can paint your vision red. Plant you with an appetite that can only be quelled by revenge. I've seen bloodlusting folk who've failed to satiate their savage desires, rabid like a tick-bit saber scythe, the only cure their own swift and merciful death. And with Pa already dead, slain by Khan's hand. Raigun begins to edge forward like a mountain shifting from its perch, and I press myself flush against the wall, pack in hand. Be careful, I yell at Khan, despite not being able to see him from all the way down here, trying to become one with the stone.
Always,
he bellows, before Raigun hefts off the plateau's edge, his tail the last part of him to slither from the burrow as he plummets from sight. Rave. Chapter 59. The booming thudump of dragonflight has me spinning to see Raigun soaring toward the east, Khan saddled between his massive wings, a cluster of spears notched by his boot. My heart bangs against my ribs like a gallop of hooves. Snarling, I flip up my hood and whip my head back around, large stones shifting beneath my heavy-booted stomps to the loft's lapping tune. Chase death, Elowin Rave. I slap myself. Hard. It's all some strange, fucked-up coincidence. Or perhaps someone messed with my head while I was knocked out, fiddled with the threads of my brain, tied knots where they shouldn't exist, patched me up incorrectly. That must be it. That has to be it. I come to a redstone wall that stretches from within the jungle, across the shore and disappears into the loft's ruffled depths, many luminous warding runes carved into its stumpy height, as well as a bunch of painted words. Danger. Turn back now. Keep out or die a horrible death. Beware. A hushling lives here. Shrugging, I leap it and continue on, whistling my calming tune to distract myself from replaying Khan's caustic words in my head. If there's a hushling living somewhere over this side of the fence, I'll be gobsmacked. Being one of the few folk who've likely gotten within swiping distance of one and lived to tell the tale, I know full well no warding runes can hold them off. They'd step right over those things with their pale, lanky legs to get to the brains on the other side. It would have ravaged the city long ago, meaning this heavily jungled, uninhabited point of the bay is being protected for some other reason I'm determined to discover. Not sure why. It's an itch I need to scratch before I finally ditch this place and hunt wreck to the other end of the world. Preferably as far from here as I can get. I'm nearing the peak's sharp, rocky tip when a tree catches my eye, its roots gouged deep into the rocky overhang that fringes the shore. Its gnarled branches stretch in all directions, riddled with knots. One that makes me pause, oddly smoother than the rest, as though it's been touched many times. With a lilting giggle, Claude swishes past my ear and toys with the tree's long coppery leaves, making them look like dancing blades. I frown. Drawing closer, I reach out to touch the knot that drew my attention, fingers skating over a small handle-type nub that sticks out from the center. I pinch it, give it a wiggle, and the thing pops free, revealing a small hollow behind. Huh. Casting a glance over my shoulder toward the sleeping city, I search the skies, the esplanade, deciding I'm little more than a speck. No need for me to be sneaky like I've got something to hide, rooting around in tree trunks that don't belong to me. I stuff my entire arm inside the hollow, flopping my hand around the smooth internal cavity, fingers grazing something hard that rattles around. Frown deepening, I grab the cold lump and pull it free. My heart whumps fierce and fast as I cradle this small stone carving, a three-dimensional depiction of Khan's Melmer, a moon plume and a saber scythe bound together like two halves of a circular whole. My skin prickles despite the muggy heat. Another glance in the direction Khan disappeared before I plug the knot back into place. My hand tightens around the carving, and I grab the branch, using it to haul myself up the overhang, then move into the jungle's dense, overgrown guts. I push past low-hanging vines and round, velvety leaves, insects buzzing about my face, certain I'm hearing a playful giggle through the trees, the echo of a thundering chase. The sounds are there, but not. Snuffed out, leaving nothing but the smoke from a once frolicking flame. I frown, the underbrush crunching beneath my boots while I trace the sense of a path that certainly doesn't exist in reality, but is somehow vibrantly clear in my mind. A different color to the rest of my thoughts, luminous and with its own pulsing beat that spikes me full of warm anticipation. Swatting beads of sweat from my brow, I emerge amongst a clearing at the base of a cliff, the sheer stone draped in a leafy, vining plant. I stare up at it, unable to shake the feeling that there's something here. Something important. Remembering the way Khan parted the fall of foliage in his private garden, I tuck the carving into my satchel and step forward, pushing at the vines, growing restless when all I find behind is stone. Stone. More damn stone. Perhaps I'm going mad. Creators, it certainly feels like it. I'm palping a stone wall when I could be on the back of a molten maw, soaring toward the fade, drunk on thoughts of how I'm going to make Wreck break before he dies. I sidestep farther along the wall, cursing beneath my breath, shoving, shoving, heart lodging into my throat when I plunge all the way through the wall and into a hollow beyond. I wrestle the foliage, sucking sharp breaths as I free myself from the tangle that's much too reminiscent of a hushling's web for my liking. Imagine that, I muttered dryly, a small laugh bubbling up. Imagine that. I shake my head and look right, moving deeper into the tunnel that's tall and wide enough for a grown male to fit through. Just. Claude giggles past me on an eddy of wind, tilling dried leaves that dance about my boots with each slow step forward. I make for the coil of stairs, illuminated by dull, natural light falling down from above, curious anticipation fluttering through my belly like a cluster of tiny cell moths. It's 5 whole turns before I reach an open archway on the right that gives me the option to veer off. I take it, those fluttery things multiplying as I step into a small cavern lit by an overhead skyhole, the cozy space riddled with blooming copper vines reaching across the walls, the ceiling. Hundreds of those bold, inky flowers that dominate the city spice the air with a zesty sweetness, the sight of them warming my chest and making me smile. Pretty. I move toward an organic, grown-from-the-stone cooking bench that reminds me of the butcher block in that little crooked dwelling in the mountain range, dragging my hand across the rough-hewn surface heavy with a layer of dust. The metal door on the stone range creaks when I open it to peer inside the ashen hollow, rusted from lack of care, my brow buckling as I run my fingers over twin terracotta mugs hanging from hooks on the wall above. It's tempting to lift one off and tuck it in my bag. They look lovely to drink from. It's hard to find the perfect mug. When you do, they always break. I pause beside a table that sprouts from the wall below a massive vine-clothed window, glowing runes etched into the frame, shredded curtains hanging limp at its sides. 2 seats are tucked beneath the table, the leather padding on one pecked at by some animal, most of the feather stuffing pulled free and probably used in a nest somewhere. I'm not sure why that makes my throat ache. A feeling I try to ignore as I move past twin leather cedars, stepping close to a large wall shelf and finding a pot of ink, an old quill, and a stack of flat, ready-to-fold parchment larks with pre-etched activation lines. I slide a thin, leather-bound book from a pile next to the ink, blow off the dust, and crack it open, discovering the pages are blank. Strange. Crouching, I find the shelf below boasts a collection of small stone creatures, mostly dragons, all carved in the same style as the one currently tucked in my satchel. Pulling it out, I shake my head, setting the carving amongst the rest, right beside one of a sharp-tipped palace. This is a couple's home, packed with relics of their love. I should go. Moving toward the exit, I intend to ease back down the stairs when Claude nips past my ear on a whip of wind that swirls up.
Giel, Giel, Asha.
My heart stills. Come, come see. It's not often she speaks to me so directly. She's too wild and aloof to maintain any semblance of a honed, sturdy presence. I rest my hand on the dagger at my thigh and edge up the stairs.
Halach te aten de wetana, atan blat mi de.
If I die this day, I'm blaming you. Strokes of luck aside, Claude's perception of danger is just as skewed as her perception of my ability to dodge it, my thoughts tumbling back to the time she lured me into the Undercity, bringing me face to face with a rogue Doomquill buck about to gut a young Huggin I guess Claude took a liking to. Not surprising, since those things are damn adorable. Not yet versed in the art of willing Claude to implode lungs, I'd only survived due to some swift maneuvering down an abandoned rubbish chute where I'd perched for half a day with the balled-up Huggin' bound in my lap. Utterly unfazed. My muscles trembled with the effort not to plummet into the velvet trog's den while the Huggin' nibbled its nails, whiskers twitching, looking at me through googly, iridescent eyes that never seemed to blink. Until the doom quill finally stopped clawing at the chute and clattered off. I'll never unsee the way it gnashed its prickly maw at the entrance, pink tongue wagging as it screeched for blood. With a full-body shudder, I open myself to Baldur's song, deciding he's likely more reliable in situations like these. Though all I hear is a low, droning hum that pours me full of a warm, heavy sense of peace. Contentment. Similar to the sound he made in Slatra's tomb. Frowning, I wind around another curl of stairs, spilling into a cozy chamber that's fed with a beam of sunlight shooting down from the sky hole above, casting the lush space in devastating detail. I pause, heart in my throat, hand slipping from the hilt of my blade. The space reminds me of the cavern that held Khan's pieced-together moon, bearing the same embossed walls boasting a passionate clash of moon plumes and saber scythes. But it doesn't house a moon. It houses a massive circular pallet pressed against the wall, softened by a spread of white sheets so fine it's no wonder they've disintegrated in places. The pallet picked apart in others like gaping wounds spewing feathers that eddy with Claude's giggling tune. A sound that echoes with another giggle that seems to rise from beneath the depths of my icy lake. A vision strikes like a blow to my brain. My heart. My soul. Me, crawling across this pallet, naked, laughing. Flipping onto my back, looking up at a male at the end, pulling his shirt up over his head while I part my legs and touch myself, desperate and wanting, needing. At the sight of his sweat-dappled body, I release a throaty groan, close my eyes, sink my fingers inside myself in an effort to sate the hunger that never quells. Not when it comes to him. The pallet dips with his weight. His hefty presence dropping close, electrifying my skin, making my heart pump in hard, rapid beats. A kiss is planted on the stretched slope of my neck, a nip below my ear that sends shivers scuttling through my body and almost unravels me upon my fingers. His lips are at my lobe, coarse words poured into me.
What do you want, Elowen?
You. I turn my head, open my eyes, get lost in Khan's ember gaze as a smile fills my cheeks. Forever. The vision loosens its hold on me, and my knees buckle. I fall to the ground amongst a litter of feathers, gasping for breath that won't come, hands gnarled into claws that drag at my chest. As I realize with soul-crushing finality, the reason I've been drawn to this point since the moment I opened the shutters. This place isn't a relic of somebody else's love. It's ours. Diary entry. Elowen Nevon. Age 18 phases. 5,039 phases after stone. This slumber, Khan played a song I recognized, the same song Ma and Pa used to sing to me when I was sick. I sang along until my words got choked by the first tears I've been able to cry since I brought Hadeon back from Netherin. They didn't spill like a soft snowfall, but like a storm lashing the window panes. I cried for Ma and Pa, for Hadeon and Alum. I cried for Slatra. I cried for things that were taken from me, and for the voice I'm not allowed to use. I didn't realize Khan had stopped playing until he scooped me up, tucked me against his chest, and held me so tight I could barely breathe, his strong body absorbing every one of my sobs. It reminded me of the way Pa picked up Ma when she was crying in the snow, the way he carried her back inside, where it was light and warm. For some reason, that just made me cry harder.
Khan. Chapter 61. The heavy smoke haze makes the sun look like a pink smudge, a quiet reminder that this village was a battlefield earlier this day. Now it's a graveyard. We step around the blistered corpse of a fallen Kok yet to be dragged into the pit, and I clear my throat. Chief Thrawn keeps my pace as we walk past bouldered homes, some reforged in the past few hours, though shattered glass still litters the ground at their base. Others are black from where Dragonflame fired the stone, the glass from their windows now puddled on the ground. Solidified. Uprooted trees lie across the path like dead bodies, their foliage withered or singed, roots still clinging to slabs of ground that lifted with their upheaval. Folk cut into the trunks with long bronze saws, hacking them into pieces small enough to be used as firewood or other supplies. "We have lost much," Thrawn says, a somber hitch to his deep voice. "But we'd have lost much more had you not arrived when you did." Had I not slaughtered his dragon? I grunt, stepping over a scatter of crushed ginkgo fruit, the bright yellow flesh browning beneath the sun's harsh rays, souring, just like this feeling in my gut. We move into the open, past fields of tawny crops that have been gouged, many plants uprooted from the skirmish that took place before I was able to lure Blom into the sky again, toward the rolling hills that sit as a backdrop for the village of Rambeck, like great crouching beasts. I could have done it here, but I wanted to give him somewhere private to curl up, since it was clear he wasn't going to make it into the sky. As it was, he didn't manage to curl up at all. Didn't solidify. Just died, and will eventually rot where he lies. I clear my throat, trying to scrub the image from my mind, gaze sliding to the clay silo, once tall and strong, now shattered. A phase's worth of grain spilled across the scorched ground, dampened by the downpour that came just after the beast was slain. As though rain herself was crying over the loss of the majestic saber-scythe Rygon, slung to the base of a gully, releasing his own tortured shriek that rivaled the howling wind. The ground had rattled just as much as my fucking bones. I pulled my lungs full, the air thick with the stench of death, smoke, and despair. "I will have barrels of grain shipped to the nearby port," I offer, watching some of the village folk move about the fields, snapping nearly ripe heads off the top of korma fronds and gathering them in carts, salvaging what they can, as well as some slow-perishing produce, to tide your folk over until you can replenish your crops. Thrawn turns to face me, his hand flat on his broad sable chest as he dips his head. "Thank you, sire." "Of course." He lifts his head, stark brown eyes heavy with the weight of loss. "And on a more personal note, I'd like to thank you for felling Blom." He brings his hand up to the lower half of his face and smooths it down his black beard, threaded with a few ruddy beads. "Had we been able to get a clear shot, I'm not sure I would have been able to order it taken." "I understand," I say, placing my hand on his shoulder. "He has been your companion for many phases." Thrawn clears his throat, glancing toward the vast stretch of coke pastures at my back. There's your second in command. I'll leave you be, but please join my family for a meal before you leave. I offer him a clipped nod, watching him move toward the shattered silo. Fuck, I mutter, my gaze lifting to the hills. Certain I'll never look at them the same again. They used to be so picturesque. Now they look like fucking tombstones. Shaking my head, I turn, seeing Grimm standing by the stone fence that appears to be entirely repaired, spoken back into shape. When we'd arrived, the herd had scattered, many of them felled and now bloated in the streets, caught by the blow of dragon flame that poured all over the village. The surviving members of the herd now graze on patches of shrub, long tongues wrapping around the stiff twigs and pulling them into their mouths. Young ones wobble about or punch their heads up at laden udders, stubby tails wagging as they drink. I move down the ashen path and lean against the fence beside Grimm, planting my forearms on the stone. Silence prevails while we watch the herd graze on what little vegetation wasn't raised by the flames, their large padded feet picking up a mixture of damp ash and mud. Something on your mind, Grimm? He clears his throat, like checking to see if it'll work before he speaks in a voice rusty from misuse. I would like to request leave. I look sidelong at him, taking in his pale hair streaked in ash, his black leathers smeared in the same orange dirt the soles of his boots are caked in. For? His eyes remain cast ahead. It's rumored the great silver saber scythe has laid a trio of eggs. My heart stills, realization sinking through my skin, chilling me to the bone. You want to go to Gondra and raid the nest of the great silver saber scythe? A single nod. For a moment, all I can do is stare at the side of his face, trying to sort my thoughts into a manageable hand. Failing. So I go with the fiery facts. I stole one of her scales many phases ago. She almost ripped off my arm. For a scale. He turns his head, and I see fragments of his pale blue eyes through the flop of his hair. Silence. I shake my head, laughing low, bringing my hand up to scrub my beard. Fuck, Grimm. I don't wish to replace Inka, but being bound to her grave has taken a toll. It's an effort not to gape at him. I've never heard the male thread so many emotionally bound words together in one sentence, and I'm all but certain I'm the only one he speaks to. He doesn't even say screepy when he's ready to show hands, just taps the fucking table with two fingers like he's ordering a mead. He's never told me what happened to Inka, and I'll never ask. I know enough about his past to know it's riddled with veins of pain that will forever throb. Did you inform the others about this decision? He shakes his head. Of course not. He and Veya are cast from the same stone. I'm almost certain they'll quietly dance around each other for eternity. And if you die there, will you have any regrets? Perhaps, he shrugs. But I'd be dead. Right. I sigh, scrubbing my face again. I was baffled by the size of his saddlebags. Makes a whole lot more sense now. Going to Gondra, you need to be prepared. Meaning he's been planning this for a while. A heaviness settles on my chest, and I hang my head, then nod and push off the wall. I'll take you there and drop you near the hatching hut, I say, feeling his gaze on me as I stalk toward the village. At least I can do, since it's probably the last time I'll see your sorry ass again.
Veya. Chapter 62. The wind howls, nipping the tip of my nose numb. 8 aurora cycles in and out of the air, sleeping beneath Zeki's wing or nudged next to sunburnt boulders, doing what we could to avoid civilization. It was pleasant until the sun lost its strength and the fade swallowed us whole with its snow and endless buffeting wind. I'm homesick already. I'm sure Zeki feels the same, nudged in an unfamiliar hutch he blew into a molten dribble before he tucked himself inside, trying to keep warm until I return. Another pushy gust, and the massive Kolk pulling Noev's cart trembles all the way to his thick, fluffy hind, though he keeps his plodding pace along the frail path of days, snorting milky plumes of air that tangle with his curly horns. I lean my head over the side, looking down the sheer drop to our left, finding the below still hidden by a swirl of mist that creates a false sense of security. Very false. I've traveled this part of the wall on mistless cycles. We're so high the plummet looks endless, like falling into a pale, moonless sky. Another howl of wind crams a flurry of snow into my hood, and the entire cart jolts right toward the equally brutal fall on the other side of the path. My heart jolts with it, my hand whipping out to white-knuckle the side of the cart. Not sure why. We're all fucked if this thing goes off. The cart, too. I clear my throat, busying myself by brushing away some of the snow that's gathered in my lap. That was a bad one. Beside me, Noev chuckles, the maniacal sound of an old crone who's done this so many times she clearly believes she's invincible. I sure hope so. I intend to die doing something brilliant and heroic, not free-falling to my doom. You're out of practice, Noev says, her voice a husky rasp from all the smoke she's inhaled over the phases. A blow like that never used to ruffle your feathers. I look sidelong at the Fae, a short, stumpy female who must be over 1,000 phases old to have earned that dollop of gray hair she keeps coiled atop her head. Not that I've ever inquired about her age. Seems rude. How are you not cold? I ask, eyeing her simple gray tunic and pants, only embellished with a fluffy patchwork belt that knots around her waist and dangles to the floor, made from the hides of her favorite beasts from times past. Or so she told me once. She quirks a quizzical brow my way, the reins draped within the loose grasp of her bare hands. I've never seen you in a cloak, I continue, no matter the weather. How you haven't frozen to death yet is well beyond me. She clicks her tongue. Have to be tough to live east of the path of days, my dear, especially in times like these. You know as well as I do that it's a hot spot for renegades and folk a few eggs short of a clutch. The cold is a cushion compared to some of the shit I've seen. I don't doubt it, and I don't particularly like going there myself. But flying into Gore's hutch would publicly announce my arrival to my not-so-darling brother. Making use of one of the old, abandoned hutches in the east has always been my safest bet, since I'd rather risk falling off this very sheer cliff than tempt a run-in with Kadok. At least until I finally get the chance to meet him in a battle ring and cut off his head. There's a jingling sound from somewhere ahead, tolling through the din. Noev pulls her own handheld bell from a compartment by her feet, rattling it, informing whoever's waiting to move onto the frail path that it's currently occupied, that they need to wait until we pass before they move onto it themselves. I tuck deeper into my fur-lined cloak. Here I was thinking the path would be quiet at this time. Oftentimes, others have the same thought. Noev says, you can clamber into the back if you're worried about being seen. I twist around and lift the flap of leather that saddles the deep wooden tray, frowning at the flock of goggin birds pecking at a scatter of seed, clucking away. One of them tilts its plump, feathery ass, then paints the thick drape in a splash of white. Gross. Think I'll take my chances, I mutter, dropping the leather, Noeb's chortling laugh making it impossible to keep a straight face. You're terrible. You missed me. I did, I admit, as a squeal of wind whips past us so fast it makes the cart wobble again. The coke tosses his head and snorts at the sky rather than buck us over the edge. That's the difference between Noeb's path-traversing colks and almost anyone else's. They're truly charmed. Less chance of death. Well worth as much bloodstone as I can pack into her very deep pockets. No wonder she turns them into belts. It's been a while since you've graced my cart, my dear. I started to think you'd gone off me. Never. I just decided I don't like the wall anymore, or most of its inhabitants, present company excluded, I say, giving her a soft shoulder nudge. Feeding folk to dragons because they piss you off rubs me the wrong way. I couldn't agree more, she murmurs, and a heavy silence elbows between us. I have no doubt she's considering times past, when this colorful kingdom was at its prime. Until Kadok marked his scent all over it and turned it into a military nest. Heard you were sneaking folk out of the city for the queen? I ask, reaching into my pocket for one of my few remaining sticks of dried meat, chewing on the lanky end. Not since she tried to stall an execution. My eyes widen. Really? Noev nods. I believe it got back to his imperial shit stain. Apologies. She's swift to tack on, flicking me a quick glance. I know he's your blood. Not gonna stop me from decapitating him, I mutter. Noev chuckles, taking a while to recompose herself before she speaks again. Anyway, I haven't heard from her since. Guess it doesn't look good for your significant other to publicly oppose a ruling of your guild, especially when that ruling's against a member of the Fear Duath, she says, waggling her brows. Interesting. Very.